Hey, if anyone out there wants to get back into the pickle costume making business, I can't find anymore. Like, I think I bought like the last one and all the stores are out of stock of pickle costumes.
That is hilarious.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. Today, I'm speaking with Russ from Design Pickle about creativity. And also, I think we're going to go a bit deeper and talk about business strategies because there's a real story behind this. So welcome to the call, Russ.
Hey, thanks so much.
Russ, strange talking to you when I'm used to seeing you in a pickle costume.
I'm actually a retired pickle now. I've since hired folks. That's sort of the initiation here at Design Pickle is you must become the pickle.
That sounds tremendously motivating. So we're doing this interview and you know those guys on the side of the road dressed us up as a hot dog. You're going to be able to do that.
It is. It really tests the culture really fast to see what they respond.
I think one thing from a creativity aspect is that I do see little snippets of you on the social media. Don't think I've actually met you, but I have seen you online with Ezra's feed. And that's one of the reasons we're talking. Because I'm interested in finding out how can someone who's got their own business step away from the computer and actually get known to their audience? I mean, it's a big question. And I'm going to guess that a lot of my audience are not going to strap on a pickle suit or whatever variation of a pickle that they might have for their business. You know, slightly different, perhaps a gherkin. They could be design gherkin, design onion. Do you think once that spot's taken, that it's harder for someone else to come in and do their own thing?
Well, you know, the pickle is really a reflection of me. Not only do I love pickles, I basically wanted to do something with a brand with my next business that was just simply fun and lighthearted because that's sort of my personality. I'm a fairly easygoing person. So that's where I would always direct people to look is like, what is your vegetable or pickled item of choice? Maybe it's not a cucumber. Maybe it's a mushroom or something, but the being able to find that and extrapolate that has been why we've been successful, not because we're super creative, it's just because it's really authentic to who I am and then the team around me who all sort of share this fun personality.
Does it have to be fun? I think that's a great articulation, by the way, how you ended up with a pickle. It's a representation of you, your character. Guessing it's a way in my brand, it's a representation of me and my character. Silver Circle brand is almost certainly reflecting the brand values translated from Mercedes-Benz, from all the time I spent with them. Mm-hmm. It certainly wasn't a conscious thing, but it just happened around the domain name and it ended up being, wow, this is very similar. Super Fast Business is also a reflection of me, usually quite fast with things. Some people say machine-like. We want high value, good service. And some people have said, okay, well, Super Fast Business says what it does. Does it have to be fun or does it just have to be authentic?
Authentic. And the reason I use humor is because it's usually not used in B2B or professional service type context. You typically see humor in consumer branding and consumer marketing. Things like Dollar Shave Club or beer commercials. So if you do choose to use it and you're in a blah or straightforward type industry, you kind of have a competitive advantage, but it doesn't have to be humor. It really just has to be authentic because what people want is they want to then pay for you and your event or your course or our service and have that be like whatever they saw or they signed up for be similar or what they expect. And that's often when brands get screwed is they basically, they're humorous and then you sign up and it's a nightmare to work with them or vice versa. You think you're hiring this professional service or product and then it's a joke and no one's taking it seriously and it's very frustrating.
Right. So it's like personality bait and switch.
Exactly.
Now you mentioned your next business, which implies you had a business prior to that. I'd love it if you could step us through what happened before Design Pickle, which has been around since January. The time of recording, that's not that long. It's a fair time online, but it's not a long time altogether. So generally, internet businesses work fairly quickly if they're going to work. or they'd fail fairly quickly. So you've obviously got it going, but I'd love to know what came before that.
I had two creative agencies. I basically came out of college, a typical, what am I going to do? And got into more the marketing design, graphic design space, and ended up rolling a lot of experience that I had working with Apple into launching my own. I say agency is the most generic. It's like the most generic term in the world, but it was more of a branding firm is what the probably more specific term. We helped companies just take a look at their brand and come up with a bunch of ideas for them on whether how they can market themselves online and offline. And it ended up just becoming a huge grind. I evolved it, took on some partners the last 3 years. I did it for 8.5 years, actually. In the last 3 years of that, I had some partners in Argentina. And that was when the world of international designers really opened up to me, because my partners, they were my partners because we were using the design team that they had already built in Buenos Aires. And we got really good at this online process management for design. The Achilles heel is we were doing everything. So if you needed an app, a website, a brochure, a trade show, anything, we would do it. And it ultimately wasn't scalable, and kind of we crushed under our own weight.
Right. So you've been around for a long time online, but you basically had to make a change. And I suppose a lot of people are reaching that point where they're feeling like their business model isn't working and they have to do something different. And you've done something different. I'm a pickle. I'll make design pickle. Was it successful straight out of the gate? Was there a few little twists and turns when you got started?
Yeah. So there is a bit of a transitional part to the story where that I don't really talk about. But when I closed the agency, I mean, it was September 2014. I remember it vividly. September 1st was when that was my first day of being unemployed, and I was freaking out. I'm married at the time. I had two daughters. I have one more by now, but I was like, what the hell am I going to do? And so I just reached out to my network and thankfully got a few consulting gigs. Now, the consulting gigs were everything from, hey, I need a new business card, to, hey, I need a new brand strategy. And it was fine. I covered my expenses. Things were okay. I wasn't going to get kicked on the streets. But the smaller design stuff, if you do that, or you know how to do that, it's not hard. It's just very time consuming. And so I ended up creating a little virtual model with a couple contractors, a project manager and a designer who just happened to be in the Philippines. I didn't decide to work there. They were just the people who I found that ended up working well. And I set up a little system internally so that when my consulting clients needed these jobs, a brochure, a banner, or whatever, paid, you know, Facebook ads, they could just request directly to my contractors through a little help desk system that I had signed up for. So once I started doing that, and then I got a few more consulting clients, I looked at this and I was like, well, hey, this is pretty clever. It's actually really easy. Like, I don't have to manage this at all. This is sort of self-managed and running really well. I wonder if I could brand this and sell this. And so then I did a little due diligence and what's out there and some creative branding around it. That's when the pickle came into play, and then we launched. So I actually was using it like for my own need first, and then found out, well, wow, this could actually help other businesses too.
I think that's a really important lesson. I want to highlight that point. I'll make a case study just to really reinforce this. Some of the things that I have in my business were actually created around my own self-need, even the ones that aren't obvious, like the coaching community. That was just a set of frameworks and checklists that I used for my own websites, and then helped other people use them on their websites. And that was my first success online, the cheat sheet for people who bought a particular type of software. And I built a little group around that. And then, of course, they wanted help with other stuff. So I built this community around helping other people, being able to answer their questions, putting more frameworks. And now it's evolved to this point where it's got a whole catalog of event video recordings. Same for the SEO business. I signed up clients to do SEO. And then other people asked for help with SEO. And then I realized that I couldn't do it all. So I brought in a team. Mm-hmm. And once I brought in a team, I might as well help other people. And I built that business up to a huge business. And then I got them to set up a help desk. And the team were actually able to support all the customers. And affiliates were driving the traffic. So other people sold it. And my team were able to deliver it. And I was nowhere to be seen in that business. The margins were a bit lower that way. So in the end, I integrated the team from the contract that I had and built my own team, and also integrated the affiliates. So now I was able to pick up two more margins, and that became a great business. And it was so powerful that I was able to actually sell that to my biggest customer earlier this year after 7 or 8 years of successfully running in the background there. It was a very great business. But the key point I'm highlighting is that you can build a business by solving your own needs, and then other people will want help with that. So you just build it out to scale, basically. And that means you can't do everything yourself. Mm-hmm. There are lots of other solutions in your space, Russ. There's 99 designs. There's every kind of bulletin board. Everyone knows a friend who can do design, or a kid at high school. But what you've done, and this is probably straight from that book, Simplify, is you're a proposition simplifier. You've made it easier for customers to be able to deal with you, and you've made the business more useful. So it's, you've basically gone direct to the customer, cut out the whole agency, the whole jobs board thing. And I think we should even look at the word agency these days. Agencies tend to imply a lot of staffing, a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of middle layers of fat where there's an expense.
Well, and as someone, I mean, I ran an agency for 8.5 years, and I really learned that agencies have the model and the cost and the expenses that they do, the good ones, because they're really in the mitigating risk business. They want to do things and ensure that they don't get backlash if things don't work out well. So they move slowly, they charge a lot so that they can put a lot of time and resources into the ideas and whatever they're doing. And that's where I thought to myself, well, that's fine. And if I'm building a custom app or a new whatever, a big advertising campaign, maybe I want that, but I don't need all that overhead and red tape if I just need 10 Google ads or my old collateral updated with my logo for my new collateral. And for agencies, they don't even like doing those small jobs anyway, but they bill $150 an hour or whatever, and they begrudgingly do 10 variants of a Facebook ad, wishing they were doing ad campaigns. So that was the dichotomy that I saw. And I was like, oh, maybe I could put something in the middle, not to say you don't use an agency, you don't use a freelancer, but just put a new option on the table that gives you a different experience, but is personalized, where you are working with a dedicated person, just not with a ton of overhead or surrounding that guy or gal.
I think that's great. You try and find a supplier who just loves doing the type of job that you want, you know, done, instead of someone who's resenting the project.
Yeah, exactly.
I had a chat with a supplier yesterday. They're an agency and they were talking about managed traffic services. And they were actually like really weird. They didn't want me to do short burst campaigns or low value campaigns. They told me that they would prefer to be spending at least $10,000 per month. And that's great for them, but it's not great for me because I don't really need that right this minute. So they really put their own needs before mine. And it was like a clear signal. They're not the right supplier for me and I'm not the right customer for them. But it was fascinating how they were really more interested in what the average spend would be, because that's their metric. Very strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've come along to the market and created a great fit for the smaller customers. And it's good to screen out the right customers from the wrong customers and only focus on the right ones. It's just more economic that way. You can't serve everybody with every product. So know your space and pursue that and let people know who you're not for.
Yeah.
Lots of companies go through their analysis and they find out that the least buying customers chew up the most of their support resources. And often you'll see them cut the bottom off the market. I've even done that with my own community. I start with a paid model because I want a certain type of customer, and we get fantastic members in our community because of that.
Yeah, and I want to come back to what you mentioned actually kind of in passing, but like our team, it's like the no judgment zone. I mean, you could have the most boring stuff and like we're going to be pumped to help you as a business. And I think as you're looking at as anyone, whether you're doing SEO or copywriting or any service that you go out there, you find the market fit for what you're doing and someone who is into it, because it's going to make your life so much easier versus trying to use one provider or one resource for everything. There's just so many cool new services out there that exist where someone is going to be really happy just to do that one little niche part of your business.
Right. And do you think this model of yours is scalable now?
Yeah. We've scaled. We're almost, I think we're well past 500 clients right now. We do about 300 jobs a day, and it's increasing. It's scalable like a call center is scalable. So we have to always be adding people, but you know, we don't need to have 10,000 clients to be a pretty profitable company. We're already that. It's just a matter of onboarding clients at a steady pace. And we're always hiring about 50 to 100 clients ahead of schedule.
Right. And I'd love to cover a few aspects there. Firstly, business model. You've got some kind of recurring subscription business model.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. It's a monthly subscription, no contracts or anything. You just sign up for the month and you can send in whatever you need during that month.
And so it's a till further notice program. So people pay until they say stop.
Correct.
Great.
Correct.
It's smart. And a lot of business owners and services are thinking, how can I put a subscription model to my business? I encourage it for my students and clients. Greg Merrilees, who's a designer, has a program like that too. So does Alan Nunez. They have great customers on the right packages. And some people target resellers or end users. Do you target one of those in particular or both?
It doesn't matter. I mean, when we design the service, I always say that it's best used if you're the end user of our creative files, because your designer's creating a relationship with you. If you're a middleman, then things can get lost in translations and stuff just moves slower between the edits and the feedback and all that. I've seen agencies or, you know, companies using on us on behalf of someone else. Say, like, get a designer, they're like, I love it. And then the next day they're like, it's terrible. And we're like, what the hell? What's going on? And it's because, oh, they're not actually the person making the design decisions. But we have lots of people. That's what's cool. And I think anyone going out to create a productized service like we've done, you know, don't be so concerned about too many limitations out of the gates, because people will find a way to get value out of your service. And if they do, great. If they don't, they'll cancel. That's the biggest thing we've found.
Oh, I think that's great. You're a performance-based integrity business where you actually want the customer to consume and to go, well, exactly like my business.
Mm-hmm.
I even built an app for my students so they can easily access the community. And I've got a private coaching section where I personally coach people. I want them to be successful because they will stay forever. This thing has just taken off, the app combined with the private coaching, because they're guaranteed to get a result and they're going to use their membership,
mm-hmm.
which will give them a profit way in excess of their membership. And some people have gone from $30,000 a month to $300,000 a month in my high-level program just mm-hmm. from having that someone else making decisions with them, going through checklists and being aware of processes that they're blind to. But isn't it great when you have a business that's centered around customer satisfaction and they get joyful results and they just wouldn't dream of leaving that, and that's a sustainable business model?
Exactly.
I think some people take the opposite approach, which is that they hope the customer forgets they're getting billed and they don't care whether someone uses the product or not. They even say, well, it's the customer's responsibility. But I think if we can take responsibility for our customer using the product, then we're going to have a great business model.
Yeah.
Some people even talk about subscription retention being just 3 months. I mean, that's a crazy number. Based on my number, I'd be looking for 3 years. You haven't even been going for that long, but what sort of numbers are you looking at for your own business there for retention?
So we always look at dollar value, because we'll often do prepaid promotions for our service, which I highly recommend as a strategy to capture more revenue from happy clients, is to offer them a chance to sign up for like a 6-month plan at a discount or an annual plan.
Exactly what I do. 12-month subscription.
Yeah.
I've migrated most of my business to be 12 months or 6 month subscriptions, depending on which program they're in, because it allows people time to commit to getting a result. And it allows me that satisfaction that I can really help them significantly in such a short time. And you get a great customer because they're filtered by a certain price point.
Yeah.
And they've got this sunk cost of investment, so they're going to use it.
They love it. Yeah. They're like better people. Well, and that's, you know, so our model, our kind of funnel is, you know, we get them in for a month or two. And that's like the self-selection phase. Either you're going to love it. About 82% of our clients are a good fit and then get the service and they like their designer and it's awesome. There's about 8 to 10% that they're kind of on the fence and we'll work with them to make sure it's, you know, it's not us, it's you kind of deal, like a dating kind of relationship. And then there's some people who just are like super unreasonable or their expectations are just out of the, you know, to the moon and they're not going to be a good fit no matter what we do. So, but once we get them in, our average lifetime value is like well over $2,000 because we'll offer them, hey, you like this service. Why don't you lock in the support for the next 6 months? And clients are super happy just to have the peace of mind that even if they're not using it, if they do something does pop up, they can just send us something off. There's not like, oh, is my designer available or can they fit me in or oh, I got to find somebody online kind of deal. And so at that point, we consider that a win, you know, and if they renew another 6 months, a lot don't, not because they don't like the service, just because they overestimated how much design support they would need, which I argue that means they're not marketing enough. But, you know, that's where we look at it. And like you said, they are happy. They love the service. They're promoters. Like those people are the people that I just freaking love and they're the easiest clients.
Yes, they're good ones. You get the best and don't worry about the rest. So can people who aren't creative be creative?
Yeah, I do think so. Maybe not in the visual. I think like creativity is not about good design, which is usually the connection people make when you say creative. Oh, I'm not a creative person. They think, oh, I don't know how to do design. But being creative is more about communicating and solving problems. So whatever methodology you use for that, I mean, your brand is very, I would say your brand is not very creative from a super traditional standpoint. You know, you have a very straightforward, no nonsense kind of brand, but I bet you're solving a lot of problems creatively. I bet you have a very cool creative business model with how you support your coaching clients and how you do these things. So you know, there's a lot of, it's not about, do you look like you're cool like Apple, but how are you solving things in a different or unique way?
That is spot on. A lot of the people I've learned from fit that criteria. Straightforward marketing and logos, the creative stuff off the charts. My main concern when I was asking you to come on this show is I just didn't want my customers to have to dress up as a pickle. And I wanted to make sure that there were other things driving your success other than, you know, flamboyant marketing tactics.
That was like a super low budget. Let's just hustle and grind. Actually, the real reason, if you want to know quickly, is I got in super last minute as a sponsor for the Infusionsoft conference out here in Arizona. And they had no booths left, but they allowed us. I was like, well, how about I hand out pickles at lunchtime and just like wrap the pickles in a, like they're prepackaged pickles. They're not just like loose, juicy pickles, but they're like sealed.
Yeah,
like,
have a pickle. Yeah. Go for it.
But like wrap it with a marketing collateral around it. And that was our sponsorship. And so I went on Amazon. I found a $40 costume and I was just like, well, shoot, I'm just going to be as ridiculous as possible so everyone notices me.
You probably bought it from Ezra unknowingly.
Dude, if anyone out there wants to get back into the pickle costume making business, I can't find anymore. Like, I think I bought like the last one and all the stores are out of stock of pickle costumes.
That is hilarious. As your business grows, you need a uniform maker to keep up.
Please reach out to me, russ@designpickle.com. If you can hook me up with a new pickle costume, because our current one's getting worn out and we need some new ones. So, but yeah, it was a bootstrapped strategic marketing thing, but it was different. So, you know, you don't have to dress up as a pickle, but you could have a clever name. You could host a different type of experience with your groups or whatever. You know, there's a lot of different ways to connect, and that's what we're doing.
The key point here is that you are fishing at the watering hole.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and I was on a call this morning. I literally was on a call this morning from a guy who remembers me from March 2015 from that event, who just signed up like however many months later from that event.
The gestation period can actually be a really long time. I had some people say they listen to my podcast for 5 or 6 years and then they decide to take the next step when they're ready. At least they know who you are. They've got context. They know what you do and they have a feeling for what it will be like. And it'll be a remarkable enough thing that someone will open an email, watch a video, listen to a recording. And I've seen photos online, so I keep seeing that profile pop up. You're there. And that's what the branding's been effective with. So let's do a quick recap. You've been in the business for a long time. You're not a greenhorn with the online marketing. You're not an instant overnight success. You're a decade-long overnight success. And when your moment came, just like in 9 Mile, you got into that spot, you've strapped on the uniform, you've realized the old way wasn't working, you wanted to be Netflix, not Blockbuster. You set up a business around your customers' needs, you've put it on with a subscription, which is very smart, and it's focused on getting customers' results. And you were able to cut the dead weight of the old model and transition, which some people never make that move. You had to swing from one vine, let go and grab the next one. Great marketing strategies, helping people, getting used to the product, and you've got a longer term relationship with them. So you've done a great job. I've seen people doing different models in that space, but it is a tough market. With design, the more customized the work, the harder it is to scale.
Awesome. Well, thanks. Thank you.
Do you get a lot of stress?
Yeah. I mean, I have 45 full-time employees, you know, so that's like thinking about them and their families and, you know, the support that we're doing. It is a bit daunting at times. It's easy to forget because it's all remote and they're all virtual and we don't come to an office, but you know, you take a step back and it's like, wow, we're really doing something.
You're definitely supporting entire families, depending where your team is.
Exactly.
We had over 60 people in our business and it is a big responsibility. Mm-hmm. It's just not good for your team or customers or your team mm-hmm. if your business doesn't go well. So the best thing is to make your business successful.
Yeah, who knows? Like I unplug every election cycle. I just unplug because it gets too insane.
So what would you like to pass on as a legacy from this podcast? What is your advice to someone who has a business already, which is 95% of the listeners to this show, or they're at least working on one on the side and they have all sorts of frustrations? I've asked them what they are, Ryan Levesque style. They struggle with business model. Recurring is definitely something they're interested in getting because some people have spiky cash flow.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the first things I wrote out, when I was consulting, I just had this wish list. I didn't even know about Design Pickle, but I was like, I want these sort of things in my life. This is the lifestyle I want. And recurring revenue was the number one thing, not because it was cool and sexy, but it was stable. It allowed me to, it's like a litmus test that you're creating ongoing value if someone's willing to pay you more than once. And that's the type of business I wanted. My agency was me trying to convince people to hire me and then me being like tested massively to produce so much value in such a massive way one time. And sometimes we would, other times we would fail and it just sucked. I was stressed out. The recurring revenue is like, you're steady. You're like the tortoise. You're just, here you go, here you go, here you go, here you go. And that's what I wanted. And I think that's the best type of lifestyle business because you're now not trying to prove yourself every single month over and over and over again.
You've brought your personality to it. Other frustrations they have, trouble scaling, partly because they're struggling to hire a team. If you've got a lot of employees, you must have learned a few things about dealing with people.
Yeah, well, and it was document the shit out of everything. Like every process, everything we do, everything we did, it was, can I share this with someone else? And if the answer was no, then it was too complicated or I was not being clear and I needed to scale it back or change it up or break it out. And that allowed me to build a big team really fast was because we just kept our business model simple. We said no a lot, and we documented it all in a back-end system that everyone has access to.
You've got a goal. You've been at lots of events. You've made great connections.
Mm-hmm.
And you've indicated there's some technology going on in the background to move people from one plan to the other. What would be your number one way of filling up your funnel for prospects?
Like me personally, or just the general recommendation for anybody, or both?
Could I be greedy and ask for both?
We have now enough data to show that finding niche communities and sponsorships for those, whether online or in person, is our moneymaker. Like getting in front of people, mastermind groups, trade shows, conferences, that's the way to go. Because it's like hyper direct mail is the way I like to look at it. Like we basically can just say, here's what we do. Do you want it or not? And people can make a quick decision. So that's been our biggest success. It costs a lot of cash. You know, it's not the easiest to do if you're bootstrapped and just trying to, a $5,000 sponsorship, a $20,000 sponsorship, it can suck up a lot of resources, but it definitely ROIs. The other thing that I say is like, become a Facebook marketing expert. That was the first paid channel that I went after. I took some online courses. I did it all myself almost the first year, and it totally worked. And Facebook wants you to succeed. And that's how we got a lot of our reach out there. I now have an agency that does it, but like I knew that if I was to ever hire an agency or grow to the place I wanted, I would need to be able to call their bullshit and be able to like know that tool. And it was like a weekend course. Like it was maybe like 5 hours of content, and I knew enough to be dangerous. So it's not a complicated bar, but that's almost like, learning how to drive a car or something. Like, I just feel like knowing that is like really, really, really important for online. We haven't had a lot of success with Google. We've tried a lot, but I think Facebook's good for us.
That's a really good distinction. I'm surrounded by Facebook experts, four of them in Silver Circle alone, who are doing really well. There is an insatiable demand. I just had an episode with Alana, episode 501, classic Facebook mistakes. We also shared how to fix them. And that was specifically designed just to get up and running.
Yeah.
If you fix those things, you're in a way better position. We also covered a cool trick on how to keep social proof on a campaign. That was tip number 11. So it really is a how or a who question, as Dean Jackson says. Instead of learning how to do it, who can do it? Get brushed up on the basics, sure, but find someone who knows and palm it off to them as quickly as possible. You can be hyper-segmented and get the exact type of customer you want. That definitely falls under the conversions and selling topic, which is another topic that people are struggling with. What are you driving people to while we're on conversions?
Well, we've tested everything. I mean, I've done webinars, I've done downloadables. Honestly, at the end of the day, like our sales pipeline is just, here's our service. Like it's an awareness thing for us, because I'm not trying to convince somebody to start designing as if they've never done design before. Like here's this new thing you need to do in your business or this new software. It's mainly do you have a pain right now that's around design, and here's an opportunity for you to use this service instead of or for the first time? And we've tried to be super clever. I mean, I read .com Secrets by Russell Brunson. I was like doing all the cool things and all these crazy funnels, and we were lead pages customer, and like our sales cycles were like 21 days, 30 days, 60 days. And we finally just cut all that out and just said like, here's our service. And we found that people just either signed up or they didn't. So that's why Facebook kind of works, is because we're not trying, people who are looking for like, oh, I need a designer. I need to find an agency or designer. We don't want to tackle that problem. We just want someone who is already spending money on design to say, oh, I didn't know you guys existed. I'm interested. Let me take a look.
Yeah. There's a nice little ad headline. Already spending money on design? Question mark.
Totally.
We've covered quite a few topics on this general episode, and I think there'll be some great points people can relate to, because in small business, we're looking to scale. We want to make conversions. We want good business model. We want to be authentic. We want a great relationship with customers. And this has been really useful. Thank you. Thanks, Russ.
Yeah, absolutely. I love talking about it. I mean, If anyone needs anything, including if you have a pickle costume hookup, russ@designpickle.com always can help out, answer any questions.
Fantastic. Thank you. I've been speaking with Russ Perry from designpickle.com. If you like this show and if you got value from it, why don't you share it with someone who could get some use from it, or perhaps leave a rating on iTunes. That would be amazing. Thank you.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.